And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 26th episode of the Open Paddock Podcast. Rally Sean with Indy Mike co-hosts this with the mostest as usual. And we have had a really busy Wednesday afternoon, so show is jam-packed this week. So, Mike, how are you? I did note that today the Purdue Boilermakers played the Ohio State Buckeyes in basketball.
Yeah, have you heard how that's going yet?
Yeah, I heard that Purdue won by 3 points.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, so number four ranking is still intact, and we should get first place votes because that's like the second top 10 team we've beat this week. So I don't know what we got to do to get a first place vote, but dang.
That's pretty sweet, and retribution is sweet for losing to Ohio State at home earlier this year. So very nice, but. You know, to be honest, even though I am an Indiana boy, I don't really care too much about basketball. I'll watch in March.
Yeah. Alan, the only people I really follow in the basketball realm is Purdue because I don't even watch it. But Purdue's always had a reasonable program, and they're really kicking it up a notch this year.
So certainly. We haven't seen this kind of success since the days of Glenn Robinson. So
I don't even think we've seen this kind of success with Glenn Robinson, to be honest.
Well, that may be true. That may be true.
So. But holy cow, we got a jam-packed show, as I mentioned. My hands are tired from playing the World of Outlaws Xbox game, as me and Mike discussed before the show. And he will now go and purchase. Yeah. We will now have World of Outlaw man challenges on the 360. But that team, I put in like 250 miles on Forza 3 last night. So I'm about driving gamed out. So.
Time to pop in Mass Effect.
Exactly. Yes. I need to get back into that. I actually stopped because I got burned out on it. But today I did put down $5 on Battlefield Bad Company 2 and Final Fantasy 13, so I'm excited.
Very nice.
March is going to be a good month.
The spring is good for Xbox fans, and I'm going to be getting Mass Effect next week sometime. And plowing through that, then Crackdown, then some other stuff coming up, Red Dead Redemption. Those are big on my list, so I'm very excited about that. But going on towards the end of the season, end of the year, we're going to see the Formula One game for the major consoles, and then also the WRC game. And boy, am I excited about both of those. Yes.
I'm more excited, I think, for the WRC game, but the F1 game will be fun because just playing it on the Wii, the Formula One game was fun, but a little fake. Maybe they'll kind of tidy up a bit for the next.
Wii! It's Formula One!
Yeah, right. No
you
kidding.
Have to say it in a Mario voice.
Nintendo Wii! I actually fired a red Koopa shell at Rubens Barrichello. So
nice. See, I think that's something that Bernie's trying to bring into F1. You know, shortcuts and little red buttons that you push to go faster and things like that.
I mean, fire Koopa shells.
And Koopa shells are probably coming to F1. Hey, we can't design a car that you can pass, so let's do Koopa shells.
Well, they already have Kurs, which is about the equivalent of the mushroom. So yeah, now all we need is the Koopa shells. Which apparently, if you look at Virgin Racing, that's their front wing. They just fire that thing off into you. So.
Oh, and the Virgin dives to the right side of the track and picks up the mushroom on the track, and suddenly the car grows twice its size and is now firing fireballs.
Luca DeGrassi just ran Michael Schumacher over. And I'm not saying you drove into the back of him. He just killed Michael Schumacher.
Anyway, but we have lots of fun stuff to talk about. And, yes, the video game that is Formula One and the ever-increasing soap opera in Formula One. We will get to that at the end of the show. There's some fun stuff to talk about there. A lot of it, though, revolves around who we're actually going to see on the track. What fun. Yeah. We've got some stuff to talk about in the IndyCar realm. We've got some fun movement over at KV Racing. Lots of rumors putting Takuma Sato there, but EJ Viso is looking pretty hot there as well. We got some stuff to talk about with Jill DeFerrin, some stuff about JR Hildebrand and the Lola chassis. And then, to top off the show, we're going to talk about Rally because Sweden took place this week. And yes, boy, for a Ford fanboy like Sean, he has to be beside himself, a twitter with joy.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. There was no finer way to start off the 2010 rally campaign than Rally Sweden. A lot of big headlines going into the season, but most of all of them centered around what was going to happen between Mikko Hirvonen and Sebastian Loeb. Now, Sebastian Loeb, as we know, not the best snow driver in the world, but he did win a big one last year in the snow, beating Mikko Hirvonen. So, you know, you can't count him out. He is a six-time champion for a reason. Mikko, though, looking really good off his Monte Carlo win. Obviously, Ogier was looking superb after Monte Carlo. Teamed that with Danny Sordo, getting his stuff together, and Petter Solberg, Marcus Grönholm, and Kimi Räikkönen, which we'll get into him later. I have some not-so-nice things to say about him, and I have no problem saying it because I'm not really a fanboy of his in the WRC, well, but...
If I were picking on Kimi Räikkönen, I would pick on that that Buddy Rice style flat brim hat of his that makes him look even less attractive as a man.
So. You know, I got him confused with the U.S. snowboarding girl the other day. Just kidding. Nice. She wears Red Bull too. anyways, we got into the first night super special. Danny Sordo was able to take that. So Sordo was leading the pack heading into the first day of proper stages. And boy, it was a real battle there. All day flopping the lead back and forth. Loeb, Sordo, Hirvonen. You know, a real battle. And Jari Matti Latvala was holding it down for Ford. Really playing the number two role. Before Sweden, Jari Matti and Principal Wilson had a discussion about Jari's role for the rally, and he was specifically told that he is the number two. There's no chance he's going to win the championship unless Mikko fails, and he is to play number two and support driver to Mikko Hirvonen at all costs. Pretty
very
simple.
Very nice.
Yes. We can't let him actually think he's going to win or he may screw something up. So
I think that's all the reason that they refurbished that janked up chassis that Jari rolled down the mountain, because they're going to tell him, Jari, if you finish ahead of Mikko at any race this season, you're going to get the janked up chassis for the rest of the year.
Exactly. He's like, no.
Portugal.
But if you crash as well, you'll be in it as well. So you have to finish in the perfect number two spot, which is either third or fourth. But yeah, had great battling. Day one highlights, not really going to get into the day-by-day breakdown, but some of the high points from day one did happen in a very strange fashion. One of the things that we never really see in rally, and one of the things that we like about rally because of this, is you never really see a lot of cars racing each other on the track because it's not wide enough. And to be quite honest with you, if you are that much faster than somebody else, it's not really going to make a big difference on the outcome of your stage time. So we don't really see that very often, but we've seen something even more ridiculous on the stage, and that was between Petter Solberg and Matti Wilson. Yes, the two gentlemen who I've just mentioned were actually running a really competitive rally, really much top 10 all day, and then it happened. There was a situation when it broke down like this. Petter Solberg and Matti Wilson. Wilson had went off the stage early on. This is special stage 5. Wilson goes off. Petter Solberg overtakes Wilson. Wilson gets in behind Solberg and is following Solberg. Solberg goes off and gets back on. Wilson then goes on to stall the car, and Petter Solberg drove into the back of Matti Wilson's stalled Ford Focus on stage. That, I don't think haven't seen that in a long time, and it was awfully odd when I read it. Definitely not good for both of them, and didn't do them any favors. in his one-off for the year, and Kimi Raikkonen as well making his Citroen debut. We'll also hit trouble as Marcus suffers some electrical problems that would have him sitting out for about 13 minutes, and then Raikkonen hit a snowbank that lost him 26 minutes as he was actually out digging himself out of the ditch. Situation. And I've dubbed after this that after the evidence put forward in court, Kimi Raikkonen is known as Captain Crash.
Oh, wait a second. No.
Yes. He's yet to be in a race. He has yet to compete in a rally where he has not hit something or somebody.
That's pretty high non-praise coming from you, Sean.
It is non-praise because I think because I'll get into that in a bit. I have a rant for him. That he is now Captain Crash, and that will hold until he can prove me wrong. In the lower tiers, we did have the inaugural SWRC and P.G. Anderson, a man who I watch always with great admiration when he's in the event. This guy can drive. And, yeah, he drove. That man was on fire for the inaugural round of the SWRC, and his lead was never in question. Hmm. And it started on day one. I mean, this guy was a man possessed in that Skoda. And also Patrick Floden, who's also a really good driver, was performing in the performance PWRC. And he led most of the day on day one, but then took some pressure from Anders Grundle at the end of the day. But nothing, you know, the lead was such that it was not that big of an issue. So we would then move on to day two, the high points of day two being well, nothing really. The battle between the two top dogs would continue on and on. Hirvonen would actually take the lead because of some bad decisions by Sebastian Loeb, if you can believe that. Sebastian Loeb put there was a tire strategy towards the end of the day when Mikko was they opted to put new tires on at different times during the last part of the day. And when they did do that, Mikko Hirvonen was able to take the lead rather convincingly. Loeb's tires were destroyed by the time the end of the day had come, and he couldn't. He and Sordo both were like, we can hardly keep the cars on the track, on the stage. So
yeah, I remember hearing comments from him basically saying this was a huge mistake.
Yeah.
So bad situation.
Yeah, it was. It did give Hirvonen a 16-second lead going into the next day. Again, Grunholm did actually do something good this day. Grunholm took the stage win at Sagan, or however you want to say it. You probably know better than I. But if you remember back to when we were talking about Marcus, the reason that he even entered the rally was for this stage. It's his favorite stage in the world. He actually named his restaurant after this stage.
Oh, nice.
And he said that his sole goal, on top of performing and doing well and trying to go for the outright win, was to win this stage. Well, Marcus, mission accomplished.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, Petter Solberg, dismal weekend. He was able to climb back in the ninth after the contact with him and Wilson. And then P.G. Anderson continued to dominate the SWRC. However, Martin Prokop, a gentleman who I like very much as a rally driver, he's a spectacular driver, actually claimed a stage win.
Hmm.
So the dormant
in the 2000.
He took a stage win in the 2000.
Nice.
So the field had been dormant all day, or pretty much all weekend up to that point. From P.G. Anderson, and this really, the stage win there towards the end of the day was actually a sign of life, that life actually was existing in the field, albeit, you know, one stage. But it was little too late. Also, Floden would continue to extend his PWRC lead to over a minute over Grundle, so that that race was over unless something cataclysmic happened to Flodin. And I tell you, both these drivers, P.G. Anderson and P.G. Anderson and Patrick Flodin are spectacular drivers. And the reason why they don't have a WRC drive
is because there are only like 9 WRC machines on the.
Well, I mean, but still, I mean, they're really good drivers. I think, you know, some of the Stobart drivers could probably be actually Stobart. You could probably shed Matthew Wilson for a P.G. Anderson and maybe get rid of. Maybe get rid of Kimi Räikkönen and put a Patrick Flodin in and actually be legitimate. But, you know. Day three, though, it was a shorter of the day, shorter of the 3 days. Hirvonen would eventually take the win, winning by a margin of 42.3 seconds after Sebastian Loeb threw in the towel. So... Loeb had already pretty much said that it was going to take a miracle to catch Hirvonen on the third day. He said it was possible. It was not an insurmountable lead. However, you know, it would take, you know, with the conditions being what they were, it was too hard. However, Loeb would actually lead in the early stages, actually take the lead from Hirvonen, which had to rattle the Finn, you know, because you've been leading, you know, been in a fight on and off, and here comes Loeb saying that, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to catch him. And in the morning stages, he takes the lead. So, I mean, that just shows the potency of Loeb in those machines. However, Ford did make a differential change to Hirvonen's car, and it was all over after that. And Loeb was like, yeah, done. I'll go ahead and settle for a second place, take the points. I'm not going to make a stupid mistake. Go off in the, like the last stage and finish out of the top 10. I'm just going to slide into second spot here, grab the points, and we'll take it to Mexico on gravel where I'm more comfortable. Third place would go to Jari Matti Latvala after Danny Sordo's day two problems, which he actually had to stop for overheating and he hit a snowbank. But Sordo would recover to finish in the fourth position. Other notables, Ogier would finish fifth place, which was the highest non-factory entrant, continuing to prove his worth and actually putting Danny Sordo on note. Citroën team boss actually said that, you know, Sordo is going to have to pull it together and perform a little bit better. And if he makes a mistake, that it would be no thing to put Sebastian Ogier in the factory Citroën with Loeb, which would be an absolutely disastrous combination for a Ford fan. So with that, Ogier would finish fifth, followed then by Henning Solberg's Stobart Ford. Didn't really hear much about him all weekend. Wilson would finish seventh. Mads Osberg would finish eighth in the Subaru, the older Subaru, actually. If you remember, he changed it because he liked the way it drove on the snow better than the new one.
Yeah.
He would finish eighth ahead of Petter Solberg, and then P.G. Anderson would finish in the 10th position, sporting the S2000 chassis in the top 10 there, and earning himself a championship point. So, thanks to the new stupid point system. But...
Yay. Go FIA.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm going to Hollywood, yeah. Anyways.
Anyway, I feel a rant coming on.
Yeah, well, we did have two notables to mention real quick. Grunholm would finish 21st after a puncture, would just continue to crash his day. He said that next time he does a one-off, he's testing more. He said he didn't get enough testing time in the car. That was the reason for his brutal performance, even though I don't think it's that much at all. I think he did fantastic. I think he just got a couple really unlucky breaks with the puncture and the electrical problem. And then Kimi Räikkönen would hover in the other Citroën Junior. Remember that the first Citroën Junior finished fifth. Kimi would come in 30th position. Hell of a debut, Kimi. Hell of a debut, kid. And
Kim. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, sir. Moving on.
Moving on from Kimi. We have some interesting news that's come up this week. We just found out today that our good friend John from Last Ditch Racing is going to go hang out with Kimmy. He's going to go hang out with Kimmy at the Rally Mexico.
Yeah, but not as a fan either.
Very nice. Yeah, he put a post up on Last Ditch Racing's website today stating that the Rally crack dealer called him with an indecent proposal to rent a Peugeot 207 car.
Oh, my. What an indecent proposal indeed.
John's already going through a bit of a whirlwind trying to get everything prepped, you know, all the the recce car, the Subaru, and you know the stuff that they use to get the equipment over there, trying to get it all ready for the rally that is coming up at 100 Acre Wood, which we're going to be attending next weekend. But on top of that, he's also driving to Boston to get passports and things of that nature. So pretty hectic and crazy stuff going on with Last Ditch Racing. So we're excited to hear about this, and we're excited to listen to John as he continues to tell us more of his plans as they move into Rally Mexico.
Our tame racing driver, John.
Yeah.
Some say his tears are currently being researched to cure cancer. All we know is his name is John. So that is awesome. You know something? I am nearly willing to bet that John finishes better than Kimi Raikkonen.
You know, that might be a bet that I would be willing to take, because I think Kimi is going to see the little taco stand by the road. He's going to have to stop and ask them if they have fried ice cream.
Nice. No hablo español. Fried ice cream?
Do you have fried ice cream and a taco?
They're like, hola, señor. He's like, what did he say? What language is he speaking? Can I find a photocopier around here? So I'm willing to bet that John of Last Ditch Racing defeats Kimi Raikkonen in Citroen Junior car. I'm willing to bet on it.
And will this also be Ken Block's first go at WRC, won't it?
Yeah.
So I'm also probably willing to bet that John will place higher than Ken Block.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Maybe I should be careful with that, because it will be a M Sport prepared
Focus
instead of a that Norwegian outfit or whatever that prepped.
Cannot be that.
Yeah. Anyway.
And it's time for our special 100 Acre Wood Rally announcement. Which you already know, so don't sound too peaked. But today we got our official email, and we will not only be attending the 100 Acre Wood Rally, we will be covering the 100 Acre Wood Rally in media form. We got our media passes.
Very nice.
So we will be able to come to you next week from the 100 Acre Wood Rally with interviews from the likes of Travis Pastrana, Ken Block. Of course, as always, we're going to have John Moore, you know, first and foremost, and probably more than anybody else, seeing as though we are heavily associated with said driver. But we will have a little bonus snippets from Pastrana and Block for you, as well as the likes of the Rally America community. It's going to be an awesome time, and I also plead with you, if you were in the Missouri area or within driving distance of Salem, Missouri, please attend the 100 Acre Wood Rally, because it will be well worth your time. It's all free to get in, and we'll be there too. So if you are there, if you listen to the site, listen to the podcast, read the site, stop by. We'll be in our shirts. Give us a, you know, hey, how you doing? Or hey, your show sucks. We'll take it either way. Don't matter. So that's going to be awesome. So we have our credentials, our first credentials for our first race.
Very nice.
So, okay, let's see. Moving on, I've already said that Raikkonen is garbage, so let's go ahead and get into the 2011 calendar, shall we?
Very nice. Yes, North One Motorsports has pretty much announced they are looking forward to a new calendar for 2011, and they're proposing it. Now, this new calendar that they're talking about will have some interesting highlights, and one of those would be the amount of races. How many races are they talking about?
Oh, they're up around 14 or 15 rallies that they're going to pick, which sweet. I think we're running like 13 this year.
Yeah, sweet. Now, and the other interesting aspect of the calendar is they're talking about no more of these race-sharing deals.
Yes.
where basically events are on 1 year and off the next. Good formula to lose rallies.
Yeah. Monty.
Very popular case in point.
I rest my case.
Yeah. For a promoter in any form of motorsports, whether it's circle track, whether it's dirt ovals, whether it's road courses, street courses, whatever, you have to be able to build on your event year by year. And this is the same with a rally. You know, if you want to have a rally year after year in a location, if you want to have a successful rally, you need to have it year after year because you have to build up the volunteer base. You have to build up the support base, and you can't just disappear for a year. Any promoter in motorsports is going to tell you it's a bad idea to take a year off of anything. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes, but amongst the things, some of the other points that were made about the championship, though, that also bode well is a lot of the traditional rallies. You know, like John Todd said when he addressed the launch, we need to embrace the heart of our championship. And we said, well, how can we do that if you are changing the races every year? Well, now that's apparently going to stop. And now we're looking at more traditional events, such things as Finland, which is just re-upped for another 5 years. They're also trying to get Monte Carlo back on the schedule as a permanent fixture, which I said that's a great idea because the fact that the Monte Carlo rally, okay, yes, the FIA and the WRC burned that bridge originally, and the IRC was able to capitalize on it. The fact of the matter is this, the Monte Carlo Rally should not be a WRC IRC invitational event for WRC drivers. It should be a because we've seen what's happened the last 2 years. Both Irvine and OJ absolutely mauled the field to death.
Yeah.
What it should be, and the organizers, I hope the organizers are not blind to see this, what it needs to be is a WRC event, or an IRC with IRC invitational status. Because the driving talent is obviously better than in the WRC than it is the IRC. So if the WRC, if the IRC wants to be so good, so awesome as they always claim to be, then they should have to go and beat the WRC drivers at their event, not vice versa. Because all this is doing for the IRC when the WRC drivers come over and beat the living tar out of their drivers is make them look bad.
Yep, absolutely. And
so that's definitely something I would think. Needs to happen. Also, one of the other things that we were talking about as well was a potential surprise in a new market. Interesting.
Where would that be?
Well, they're not saying. the North Star One really shut mouth about what's going on with the actual official events. We have heard of new events in Abu Dhabi with the Canada event taking place next year, as well as a potential rally in Russia. However, that was already hinted to earlier in the article. They said that there is a buzz about a surprise event in a new market. And Abu Dhabi is not a new market because that's the Middle – we already have Rally Jordan. That's the Middle East. The Middle East is all about rally. Russia, maybe, but they're really not any strangers to rally. I mean, they have big rally races every year that cover a lot of distance. And I can't think of any other place than the United States. Yes, thank you. Now, granted, we have no actual statement saying that the United States is the event, so don't run out and tell your friends, the United States is on the WRC calendar, because it's not true.
Yeah.
All we're saying is that there's buzz about a new event, a new market, and the rally has not been in the United States for years, WRC-wise.
Yeah, when we talked to John about whether or not they would come up with a rally in this hemisphere anytime soon, one of the things he pointed out was Canada was a more likely proposition because of the support base that's already in place up there and some events that are already close to WRC caliber. So maybe we get one in the States. Maybe it's kind of something close to the States. Mm-hmm. Either is perfectly acceptable to me, though.
Yes, I will find passport if it's in Canada. Mexico, I didn't know it was so soon in the year. Otherwise, I'd be going to that, and I'd cover John there. But, Canada or United States has to be it. But I'm even willing to go a little bit further and say that it would be the United States, I think. Mm-hmm. I think.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. Some of that might depend on the success of a Mr. Ken Block and his Monster World Rally Racing team. Because if he comes out and lays an egg, it's going to be kind of hard to use that to build the support.
Yeah.
But, anytime you can have the Monster Ladies dressed up in their regalia in the middle of Paris, showing off, to the staid rally crowd, the extremeness of American motorsports.
Yes, putting it nicely.
With fishnet stockings and Hooters outfits,
Hey, just so long as he's willing to share, one or two of them, I don't have a problem with that. Just kidding. Yes, PG. We're not really sure exactly where it's going to be, plain and simple. But one of the places that I would think, the new market will be somewhere in the North America realm, whether it be Canada or North America, like you said, or United States, either way is fine with me. But I think that the United States would be the market in which I think, and this is two things, because yes, you have Kim Block. Mm-hmm. He's obviously the driving force. But what about sponsorship? Well, there's two potential options, Monster or Ford. Because if you look at it, Monster obviously has, oodles of money draining, they have so much they don't know what to do with it. And that's mainly because I buy a Monster every day at work. I support the cause. But they would be happy to sponsor it. And what about Ford? Ford is one of two manufacturers in the WRC. Why couldn't they sponsor an event to show the American people, look at this, our Fiesta and our Focus in this event, and they do well.
Look at this, our Fiesta and our Focus in this one event, and by the way, we still sell cars.
Yeah. Both of these two you can pick up at the lot, drive on, race on Sunday, pick up on Monday kind of thing,
Yep. And it doesn't look like a brick with a wing off the back.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh my gosh.
Good job.
Yeah, well done. Well done, NASCAR. You lovable little pukes. Speaking of which, side tangent, because that's all we really have for WRC, unless you have another thing to put out.
Nope, it's time to move on to IndyCar.
Before we get into IndyCar, did you watch any of the Daytona 500?
I was kind of forced to watch some of it, but it was kind of hard to watch with the multiple delays they had.
This is true. I stayed away from it like the plague. I actually even went and I actually drove, just so I didn't have to watch it, I drove through a blizzard to go get Asian food. Chinese food, nice. To be precise. I drove through the blizzard to get it because I really didn't want to watch it. And I had a grin from ear to ear when I found out that the track was literally coming apart on the surface. Now, thankfully, nobody was hurt. I didn't want to see anybody hurt.
No.
But what I do love to see is the fact that the very things that NASCAR fans knock F1 fans for every year, especially when Canada happened and the track surface was coming up at Canada and everybody was griping, is now, look at this. It mirrors NASCAR. You have the track buckle at Indy. Now you have the track coming up at Daytona. Coincidence?
Nice, nice. No, it's a rather funny situation because, well, I shouldn't say funny. I mean, there was a hole in the track, a giant little pothole that was like 20 inches long and 5 inches wide, and cars were dipping their wheels into it and everything of that nature.
Took Johnson out of the race.
Absolutely. So it's a bit of a mess. Dale Jr., though, said, I don't know what their problem is. Driving on this track is like one big pothole.
Nice. Way to stick it to him, Dale.
Well, I think a lot of the drivers are getting a little concerned about the surface at Daytona because it is slick. And there, a lot of the drivers, yeah, they want a new surface there to make it a little safer to drive on. And this may actually bump it up. I guess it wasn't supposed to be repaved until 2012. So we shall see. That may be a before the Pepsi night race.
Yeah. I hope so.
Anyway.
Well, let's move on to your favorite form of racing, open-wheel IndyCar.
Yeah, you know, I like my open-wheel IndyCars, but I like my open-wheel sprint cars, too. Anyway.
nice.
Anyway, we had a little bit of movement this week. We knew Lola was going to unveil a concept for the IndyCar series. They told us a little bit about that in a press release last week before Delta Wing came out and really before Swift came out as well. Kind of an interesting situation. The Lola chassis that was unveiled, kind of cute. It's got a lot of swoopy bits and a little bit of styling. What they talked about was they were going to have two different options for bodywork on the chassis. And I'm looking at them now, and basically you've got their Lola chassis. The differences between them is one has a shark fin, one does not. One has a standard Champ Car style hoop over the engine. The other one does not. It has a more of a pointed end on it. You know, there's some styling on the mirrors that are different. There's some styling on the front. The front wings are very different. But the design clues that are completely the same between the two chassis are mainly the tub, basically the nose of the car going back to the safety cell, and the side pods for the most part are fairly the same. The interesting thing they say about these two different styles of bodies on these cars is that they'll be completely aero neutral. So it would bring a different look to a spec series.
What?
Let's put lipstick on the pig. I mean, seriously, the idea that we're going to go to a new spec chassis and to fake everybody into thinking it's not really a spec chassis, we're going to have these extra aero bits on here, and whichever one, you know, you can use whichever one you like. It's like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Yeah. I don't like that concept one bit.
Yeah.
There are some things on these cars that I do like. One of the things they've done, they have enclosed the wheels to some extent on the car. The side pods come forward more than they do on the current Dallara, and the bodywork kind of sticks out and prevents the front wheel to get wheel over wheel. There are wing elements that stick up close to the tires, so it would be very difficult to do complete wheel over wheel without you know, destroying the wing and everything of that nature. At least gives some prevention from that kind of thing happening. The same with the rear wheels. They actually have a trailing element behind the rear wheels that, again, will attempt to try and keep wheel over wheel from happening. So, you know, they've gone the right direction with that. But overall, it's not my favorite chassis. I still like the Swift better as far as looks go. But they've got a couple of innovative ideas. One of those innovative ideas is the use of the tub. Their goal is to use the tub, basically the nose and the safety cell and the engine compartment and everything of that nature, and use that for Indy Lights as well. So it'd be a common tub. You'd just add on some different aero elements to the car, different wings, different side pods, but the bulk of the chassis would be the same. Different suspension and tires on the front as well. So, you know, some good ideas. Not necessarily the most revolutionary. I think the chassis looks nice. It's, you know, again, I'll go back to the Swift, though. I really like the Swift when I compare them all. But the question is, do we want an IndyCar series that's another spec series? De facto, it became Dallara, the single chassis provider, because everybody else bowed out. Mm-hmm. It became Honda as the single engine provider because Chevy and Ford bowed out, or Chevy and Toyota bowed out. Do we really just want to keep perpetuating that, or do we want to move in a new direction? I think if you ask any IndyCar fan their opinion of what the next step should be, a lot of them will say they like the concepts of the Delta Wing. They just don't like the look of the thing. And I'm fully on board with that. I completely understand. It's unfortunate that car is not as nice to look at as this Lola, because if they could come out with a concept that could do what the Delta Wing could do, but looked a little more racy instead of, you know, schlongy.
Jeez.
We might have a winner.
Nice. So.
It remains to be seen what the IndyCar series is going to do, because they've got a bad situation. They've got owners who are supporting this Delta Wing concept, and owners who are adamantly supporting it. If you listen to Robin Miller and Marshall Pruitt, they're both continuing to talk about the idea, and, you know, some of it's coming out of Cavan's mouth as well. They're continuing to talk about the idea that the owners pushed for this concept and this idea because they want to get away from this spec racing. They've basically been they're given a spec tub and a spec engine, and they're forced to pay a premium price for it, and they could take that premium price and have innovation.
Mm-hmm. But it's still going to be spec.
Yeah. Yeah, so if we move forward with the Swift or the Dallara or the Lola, you know, it will be spec racing with a spec engine. And if they move forward with the Delta Wing, it's going to be less spec. So
I say take the Swift, the Lola, and the Dallara, and let them pick whichever one they want.
It would be lovely if you could do that, but basically the reason why not is that Lola, Swift, and Dallara can only guarantee cost savings on these chassis if they are
the only ones.
Yeah, yeah. If you open it up and say buy whichever one you want, well, one of them's not going to get bought. You know, it's kind of like the Falcon never came off the ground. There were reasons behind that beyond just the chassis itself. But if you get into a situation where you have three options, people are going to buy whichever one. Some people, like Penske, will buy every single one, test them all, and decide what they're going to run. Ganassi the same. But most of the teams will only have a chance to buy one chassis. Mm-hmm. And once they start working with that chassis, it's too costly to switch over to a different one. I mean, I agree with you. Put them all out there, make them all, do what you can with them. If you go with this style of chassis, though, with the standard stressed engine chassis, mm-hmm. Honda's the only game in town, and they're it's pretty much well known at this point that Honda's the only one that wants to move forward with the V6 and all that kind of stuff.
Mazda, maybe?
That'd be nice. If you go with a Delta Wing concept, the Delta Wing idea of moving towards the 4-cylinder, 2-liter turbo world engine.
Yeah, basically. There you go. Yeah.
No, seriously, that's what they're talking about is the FIA's world engine spec.
Oh, God.
If they go with that, there's a lot of people that make that engine, you know, and it wouldn't be a huge leap for them to tune it for IndyCar.
Yeah,
but when you go with the stressed engine like they're doing on these purpose-built cars – on the Lola, on the Swift, on the Dallara, the stressed engine is far more expensive to produce. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting thing to see.
My question is would manufacturers really want to, you know, even if you go with the Delta Wing concept with, you mm-hmm. know, all these oodles of world engines, you know, 2-liter turbos or whatever, are manufacturers really going to want to put something in something like that?
Yeah, see, that's the problem. And it does come down to the aesthetics. If you don't like the look of the car, how can you market with the car?
Mm-hmm.
So,
Delta Wing with our Ford engine. Well, it looks like a giant set of you-know-what. Why the hell am I going to buy your product?
You know, we had the discussion last week on it. The Delta Wing does not look attractive or appealing, and that could be forgiven if it were a car that was designed out of the innovation of Indianapolis from, you know, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
However, this isn't that era. Yeah. You're talking about a spec chassis.
Yeah.
And yes, you know, the Delta Wing Project wants to talk about how they're going to be this open source, open concept deal where you can buy parts from anybody and all of that. But at the beginning of the project, it's going to be a spec chassis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just can't see going to this style of car, this new brand new look, when it wasn't driven by, well, it was faster than the old car. You know?
And why not do something similar to like a NASCAR? I mean, because you're already spec anyways. You're not going to get around that. And unless you let all three in, but this is what I'm saying, is sort of do like a NASCAR, have maybe entertain the idea of the Swift, the Lola, and the Dallara. Put out what you want. Put out your specs.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it has to do. You can do whatever you want as long as it conforms to these. Then put it out there, because I mean you're gonna take these three examples. The Swift and all of them, and you know they're going to look different, but there's not going to be a lot of opportunity to really invest any kind of money into them because the specs are already going to be set. So other people are not going to go out and spend a whole lot of money trying to redesign and reinvent the wheel when they've got these three concepts that already look like they can pretty much compete with each other, and wouldn't really rack up much more of a cost. And as far as stressed engines go, I mean, it just goes back to what we said. I mean, it's kind of unless you're going to throw a world engine in the back of this thing, which would be physically impossible, you know, just not going to work. I mean, you're just going to have to get stressed.
The biggest reason a world engine, a 2-liter turbo, won't work in the back of this car, you know, with the horsepower range, the 300 horsepower range that they were talking about, is very simple. The open wheel chassis design is inefficient. Mm-hmm. You've got these giant wheels sticking out to the side, and you see them in Formula One. They do all these wonky things to that front wing and these planes and winglets and, you know, the wheel end plates. They do everything they can to try and funnel the air around and through and in and out, and you know, to minimize that disturbance as much as they can with this wide open rule book. And really, that's where innovation in Formula One is. That front wing is so different on every car because every car has different flow characteristics and in the end, yeah, it'd be great if you could do something like in NASCAR where you say, okay, here's the template, you build your own car.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the way that open wheel racing has gone, everything's carbon fiber, and teams can't afford to have their own autoclave and fab shop to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so. Peter. Yeah. I mean, what?
What?
Nice. I think the chassis looks nice. So. Oh, well. We'll see
I do, too. I mean, it's easily much more palatable than anything Dallara put up. I'm just not a fan. I'll be interested to see how this decision process goes, especially with the new CEO of the IndyCar Series starting on March 1st. It will be interesting to see what a bull rider thinks about IndyCar chassis.
Or the Delta Wing.
Yeah. He was in attendance at the Delta Wing conference.
Was he?
Yeah. Yes, he was.
Oh, boy.
Well, everybody from the IndyCar series.
Well, yeah.
You know, Barnhart and Engstadt and a whole bunch of the team owners and everything like that. So
I don't know what it is about this place, but it's not only the Delta Wing that stinks. But enough of the Lolas. We've had somebody emerge from the darkness of silence, Mike, and we never thought it was going to happen. Jill DeFerrin has come out of the woodworks and anyways, for me, surprised me with his merger with Luzco Dragon Racing. They are now one.
Yeah, that's an interesting arrangement. They're talking about this being a giant technology partnership and what have you, and long flowing press release information and, you know, PR gobbledygook. But in the end, you know, the foundation is set, and with our collective resources and leadership, we hope to break new ground to become one of the most competitive teams. Okay, that's great. I'm glad, you know. But let's talk about this. You're talking about this as being a technology partnership. Jill, I'm very happy that you've been able to form this relationship with Jay Pinsky. We understand that there's some history there, you know, being as how Jay's dad helped you win the 500 and things like that. But I don't understand this partnership other than from the standpoint of, you know, they work well together and all that. But when they're talking about this being a giant technology partnership, I mean, what technology are you bringing? A 10-year-old IndyCar?
It's a spec series.
Exactly. Spec tech, you know.
Well, apparently Gilles didn't get the message from ALMS.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, no technology. Yeah.
Seriously, though, I'm excited to hear that Jill has actually been able to manage getting this sort of merger together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their initial release says, you know, we're going to have Rafael Matos in the Air Force car this year as full time. And that's the only thing they're going to confirm at this point. Maybe we'll see a partial season effort for a second car. Maybe we'll see a second car at Indy. We'll you know, have to stay tuned and hope the best for Jill. We really wanted to see that a two car effort like he announced earlier in 2009. We'll have to take what we can get at this point, though.
Yeah, I guess so. Beggars can't be choosers in that realm.
Yeah. Speaking of beggars, we have a certain EJ Viso who is begging to get off Dale Coyne's team.
Somebody!
EJ Viso has been testing with KV Racing, and we're excited to hear that. There have been some rumors going about that we were going to hear excuse me, I said Dale Coyne. I meant HVM.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, excited to hear rumors. This has been kind of building for the last few days, but he has done testing for KV Racing, and the rumors are saying that KV is going to include Viso and Mario Marias as the two drivers. Then, of course, Paul Tracy with some partial season stuff with Indy and the Canadian races and more to come, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's good news, but it leaves a certain Takuma Sato out in the cold because he was being linked with that seat at KV. What in the world? You know, I would love to see Takuma Sato get a seat, and I'm sure Doug would like to see that as well because he's got a thing. He's got a thing for those Asians.
Oh, Jesus. Wow.
Well, you know, he's been a fanboy of Hideki Muto for quite a while, and
he's on the Kobayashi bandwagon.
He is definitely on the Kobayashi bandwagon, and now with the prospect of Sato, you know, it's turning out to be 2010 as the year of the rising sun for him. So
yes, oh boy, I can't out of control, Mike. We're gonna have to fire you or send you sensitivity training.
I don't have any sensitivity. Anyway, the only other thing that we've got coming out of IndyCar is J.R. Hildebrand has been testing for Dale Coyne. His name has been linked with Dale Coyne for a while, and he just finished up a test at Sebring with Dale, and we're excited to see the possibility of a young American driver get a seat at Dale Coyne in the Boy Scouts of America car.
Oh, boy.
Well, you know, this would continue a trend. Everybody saying there's no road to Indy anymore, but this would be another year where an Indy Lights driver has moved up into IndyCar. Rafael Matos would be the last year's pretty exciting move. So J.R. Hildebrand, looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be interesting. It's good to see him get it right. He's a good guy. He's a good driver.
Definitely. If you recall, he was testing with Force India earlier in the season with James Rossiter.
Fifi. Yes. Well, that was a short IndyCar segment. Those have been really long lately.
Yeah, with so much going on with the chassis and certainly with silly season continuing. I mean, silly season for IndyCar continues all the way up till the first race. And then once the first race occurs, then it's silly season all the way up to 500 to see who's actually going to fill the 33. So, what fun. The only other information that's come out of IndyCar is Davey Hamilton has been in a partnership group, that has purchased part of Menards Racing Engine Technology Group. So don't know what's going on there. Some rumors behind the scenes saying that there's some significant movement and that they're positioning themselves to be the next IndyCar engine or something crazy like that. But obviously that's all rumor at this point. So,
well, all right. So is it that time?
It's that time. Let's jump into Formula One.
Get your rubber boots on.
Yeah, get my clothespin, put it over the nose.
Yeah. So,
with the removal of Max Mosley from Formula One, things are getting more palatable.
Yeah, they are. I agree. I'm very excited for this season.
There's a certain stench emanating from Charlotte these days.
Yeah. This is not today. Okay, first off, I apologize to all the readers of the site about the hasty post on the workshop. I am not a real estate agent nor a real estate connoisseur, if you will. I don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about leasing or any of that. So that was my fault, and I am sorry for reporting to you slightly faulty information. However, that would appear to be only the tip of the spear in terms of the kind of stuff that we would get into with USF1, because today seems to be the nail, or reportedly, let me correct myself, reportedly today is the nail in the coffin, or it could be the nail in the coffin within the next, I'd say, 72 hours for the USF1 deal. They're just devastating losses to the team today. They've lost their what's that guy's name? Brian Boone.
Okay.
Their head marketing dude, if you will. I guess that's kind of not the right way to put it, but he's the head of marketing or head of business development, Brian Booner or Bonner. Sorry, Bonner. Jesus, help me. So he reportedly has quit today as his role as the business development. And that actually was that led up to the big announcement, the big dagger, if you will.
Yes.
And that was the potential that YouTube founder, and CEO Chad Hurley would be pulling his mega millions from the USF1 marketing, all but breaking the back, if you will, of the team. So,
that is a nail in the coffin. My goodness. I hope that what's being reported isn't actually the truth. You know what I mean? You don't want to see this U.S. Formula One team effort just go down in flames like this. But the rumors are mounting. Chad Hurley supposedly has taken the money, and is looking. He's shopping with Campos and looking at some other options, maybe with Stefan GP.
Well. Yeah.
Because if USF1 can't make it to the grid, well, Stefan GP is right there waiting. Heck, they could probably even hire an American driver.
Yeah. Oh, slap. No, this, like kicking Windsor when he's down, and you know something.
No, you know, this whole USF1 has been, you know, since it was announced, what, back in February last year, yeah. You know, March, something like that. Early on, they said they were going to do this, and then as they, you know, move forward, they got more information, more steam, and you could argue that one of the setbacks for all of the new teams was the fact that the rules package for this season wasn't set until way too late. And that was because of, well, FOTA and the FIA just had it in for each other, and they comprised the bulk of the F1 media print over the last year. Yeah. And once that was finally settled, everybody went about the business of getting a car. And it doesn't look like USF1 has they may have a car, but they certainly don't have the money to put the car on track.
No, I don't think they have a car, to be honest.
They've got a nose and toaster.
And even, I mean, even with the USF1 stuff being what it is, I mean, we got Campos too, and I mean, they're in deep trouble by, you know, all stretches of the imagination. Now, there has been some, like USF1, there's been equal amount of media going back and forth between them, with now news that, you know, potentially Campos may be leaving the team for Colin Coles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the last time that guy got into F1, he did a bang up job. Not
nice.
But apparently he's coming in with potentially Hurley, as well as a potential guy from Red Bull as well. I mean, could all be going into the Campos mix in an effort to try to secure those Dallara chassis with the Cosworth engine, in an attempt to get on the grid in time for Bahrain. However, with that, there's a lot of talk of all this Volkswagens and Seats and Colin Coles and, you know, Audis. And I mean, it's the blogosphere has turned it into a complete disaster, and is pretty much talking about every, you know, everything.
Let's take a look at Colin Coles' resume.
Suck.
Jordan. Midland, Spyker, Force India.
And where has he not stayed for his career?
Just give him the money.
Exactly.
I'm sure Chad Hurley is just so excited about potentially teaming with Colin Coles.
And making another Spyker.
yes.
And I mean, you look at it now, I mean, the only thing that Colin Coles can seem to do right is his Le Mans program, and even that is not smashing, but it's not as bad as his Formula One efforts, that's for damn sure.
Mm.
And, you know, it's just that situation too. I mean, I would think that Hurley, you know, they're kind of in the same position as USF1, so if I'm Hurley or any of those guys, I'm jumping on the Stefan GP bandwagon. These guys have got it together. They've got working bases where Toyota was in Cologne. They've got they say they have a car. They say they're ready. They can have it ready in no time flat because it's the old Toyota, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And with minor adjustments. And they've even shipped equipment to Bahrain and Malaysia. I mean, they are ready to go.
Yeah.
And all they're waiting for is one of these guys to go poop.
They've done everything they possibly can to show the FIA that if this does end up going back to a bid process, we can race right now.
Yeah, we can be there instantly.
Never mind the fact that we sued you. No, they didn't sue him. They filed a complaint in the European Commission or whatever.
Yes.
But what fun. This is the beginning of this season could be crazy, because then you've got the situation where Bernie Ecclestone has said that the teams can miss three races.
Mm-hmm.
The FIA says they can't.
Yeah.
The truth is probably somewhere in the middle. They can miss three races if they pay a massive fine to the FIA or something of that nature.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is something that obviously USF1 won't have the money to do.
They're going
to
get killed. They are absolutely... Windsor and Anderson are going to get absolutely molested for every dollar they own
by the time
this is said and done, or lack thereof.
Their business owns. Let's keep it in perspective. This is the USA. We don't destroy people's lives and houses just to, you know, collect money.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yes, we do. It's a wonderful world we live in, man.
Yes.
Anyway, yes. Chapter 11's been wonderful. Anyway.
But yeah, I mean, but these guys are ready to go. And that's, they're even talking about drivers. I think even Ralph was mentioned.
Ralph's been mentioned. Driver. Obviously, Sato's been mentioned in the same breath, but there's been a lot of talk about Karun Chandak, the Indian driver. Yeah. So this could be cool for Stefan GP to just show up with Kaz Nakajima and Karun Chandak or Takuma Sato, the Japanese dream team.
Oh, yeah, right. Since we're going to this, like, now national war zone against each other with Britain and Germany going on and, you know, nice. The Italians and Spanish are in the mix. Hell, let's just throw the Japanese in there. Unfortunately, they don't have Kobayashi, so it doesn't matter. But, ugh. What a mess that is, though. Oh, my goodness. It'll be interesting to watch.
Again, it's a black eye on the FIA. Their decision-making process on this is thrown into thrown into question, just like it was when it occurred. Everybody's like, what are you talking about? Why are these teams getting in when you've got valuable partners who are willing to jump in as well? You know, when Lola says we can come in and race in F1, why don't you take their money?
Yeah, right. Because they actually have the money.
Exactly, they have the money and they have the expertise to build race cars. We know that. Mm-hmm. USF1, what did they have? Well, they had toasters.
Nice, and an autoclave.
Yeah, it's great, but they had to build that business from the ground up. And building, you know, as has been pointed out, building a business along with building the necessary, all the stuff you have to do to have a team and build the car and everything like that, putting that all together in this short amount of time is not an easy thing to do, regardless of your level of funding. So that's asking a lot of USF1.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the FIA was wooed by their statements that they're going to have a base in Europe, which never came about, did it?
No.
There's a lot of things that never came about.
Yeah. There's actually a laundry list, I think, somewhere on the internet of things that never came about.
Supposedly, there is a rumor on Speed that Peter Windsor was apologizing profusely to Jose Maria Lopez's dad for taking all the money and running with it. So
nice.
We shall see.
Could you imagine that scene? Peter Windsor staring into a giant Argentinian man's face, bawling his eyes out. Like a little kid. He's like a little kid who got caught stealing in like first grade. And the teacher, he's having to explain to the teacher what happened. So...
ugh, so
that's got to be just a disgusting sight. But let's get off these new teams. As the next team we're going to talk about describes them, the GP3 teams or
nice
the three teams, and that's Ferrari.
The GP3 teams at the Cosworth end of the grid.
Yes. The always combustible and volatile Cosworth end of the grid.
Let it burn, boys. Anyway. Ferrari. What has Ferrari been up to?
Well, amongst other things, by reading their tweets today, they were bitching a lot about testing in the rain. But they did release a new chassis, the 282 chassis, as it's named, for the F10. They were actually hoping to get some dry running in with it to get it kind of shook down and everything, but they missed nearly every deadline this morning with Massa in the car. They spent the first 2 hours meeting in the garage area, and then the rain came, and then it got worse in the day, and everybody in the garage was so peed off because they were ready to run this new chassis in the dry, but in fact, it was raining. And I can assure you, Mike, that while reading their tweets today, they were livid. They were not happy Italianos. That was definitely the case. Their tweets were just nasty and snide. And I mean, you can you know, you could say, well, that's just what Ferrari is. Well, I've read their tweets prior to today, and they were, you know, they were happy tweets. These were snide tweets. These were mad tweets. I was like, oh, you guys need to take a chill pill. But they made the changes to the 282, and that's that. So new chassis. They want to get mileage in with it. Apparently, there's some changes that they made to it as well.
There were some rumors going about. There were completely rumors saying that the original version of the 2010 chassis they weren't happy with, and that was before they even put the thing on track. So the rumors were saying that this B spec or second chassis was to address all the issues, and they were furiously trying to catch up and all of this kind of stuff, which is garbage. Ferrari has the ability to crank out chassis whenever they want.
Yeah. Yeah. Lucas snaps his finger and a chassis appears out of nowhere.
There it is.
He's like, how do you like that?
Bleep.
But, yeah. Speaking of testing, by the way, Wednesday's session, Vettel led the timesheets, followed
the wet.
Followed by Rubens in the wet, go figure.
Ooh.
And then the surprise was Felipe Massa. So
very nice.
The spin doctor when it comes to the rain, if you will. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that was that. Just quick programming note, if you will. But yeah, the Ferrari's looking good this year, but we'll have to see. We'll just have to see how they stack up to the Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I sold out. What about it? So we'll see what happens. It should be a great year. And one of those drivers, your favorite driver, for whatever reason, had something to say today about my favorite driver, and I don't take kindly to that. No, actually, it was a flattering comment, but Fernando Alonso, who is the newly appointed Ferrari ace of the squad, was talking today, actually, about how this season is going to be awesome because he gets to drive for Ferrari, and he always has wanted to drive for Ferrari since he was a wee boy. Sounds like a certain Giancarlo Fisichella.
Ooh, hope that doesn't end like a certain Giancarlo Fisichella.
Nice. But anyways, Alonso was discussing how he was excited to be back in, but how he was even more excited that Schumacher was going to be in and that he was looking forward to racing and beating Michael Schumacher on track this year, you know, the battles that they would have. If he could beat Schumacher, that would top everything that he's done in Formula One and has, because he's already done it twice.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if I could beat Schumacher again, boy, that would top everything again.
Third time's a charm. Better watch it, Fred. But he said.
But here's the good thing, Fernando. This time he has the red phone.
Yeah, he does. He's got the red
car. McLaren has Mercedes has a mass damper.
Right. Exactly. Look at this. This Mercedes team is cheating. Oh well, he's Ferrari, and you know Bernie's loving it. But Bernie's got to be torn though. Because Bernie was all over Alonso to Ferrari because he's like, this is going to make huge money, just like, you know, Schumacher days. But now he's got Schumacher back for Mercedes. Who's he going to cheat?
Yeah.
Red Bull?
Right.
Red Bull screwed.
Certainly Bernie can't be torn because it doesn't matter what Bernie does. This year is going to sell like gangbusters. This season is going to be crazy ratings. And if it's not, F1 has shot themselves in the foot. Now, if you look at the ratings from last year, I guess the ratings were way down last year, and they're saying that the ratings were down last year because of the dusk start races, which were much later, put in a different time slot, and the European market didn't terribly appreciate it. So,
wow, didn't bite on it, huh?
No, doesn't look like it. The ratings were way down. Well, that could have been a function of the fact that your car looked atrocious last year.
Yeah, looked like absolute crap.
And Braun, the team that basically came from nowhere and won everything because of your interpretation of the double-decker rules, diffuser rules, you know, maybe people were a bit turned off by that. I know I was. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was definitely a that was definitely something that didn't need to happen, because you know, you come out of having a great 2008 championship battle, you're hoping to get everybody on board with these hideous machines that you call F1 cars at the time. And, you know, it was a real eye-opener to everybody. And, I mean, you can then you throw in, you know, Diffuser Gate, and people are just like, yeah, screw this. This isn't what I used to watch. And it was gone. I mean, I could see how the ratings were down, that changing the time, you know. Ugh, not good. But we did. I think it will be a great year for the ratings as well. And one of those reasons, whether you want to believe it or not, is the new team that we had on the grid today. Lotus. Protus Malotus.
In their very green car.
Yeah, very Lotus green with a yellow racing stripe. But
it looks sharp.
I think the car itself, the chassis, I think looks like garbage.
Well, it's, it doesn't look pretty bland, yes.
Yeah, it doesn't look anything like, you know, the Mercedes. But, you know, it's their first car, first effort. Give them a freaking break. So I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to look past it. And it is Lotus. But the thing is they were on track today with all the big boys swapping it up. And one Farouz Fazi was behind the wheel. And he completed 76 laps to come in at 11th quickest. Problem being, because I follow nearly every F1 team's tweets on the Twitter there, just to love to hear what they're saying about each other. Apparently, Fazi had no power steering.
Ooh.
Because of a supplier issue. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't quite understand, but he had no power steering.
We'll call this preseason training. Get out there and drive the car.
Yeah, exactly. Do it. But, you know, and Lotus is, you know, ecstatic about the day. They had 76 laps, car didn't break down, nose didn't fall off like Virgin, and they were 6/10 faster than the Virgin team, which will be interesting because if that keeps up, we may see Richard Branson in a flight attendance outfit. Yeah, right? Ugh. He's got the blonde locks, but something about his hairy legs and the fact that he's a dude is definitely not working. But it'll be funny, and I'm sure some people will get a kick out of it. But Mike Gascoigne came out today and said, "Hey, our performance actually exceeded what we wanted to do." He's like, I can't believe the car went the whole day without breaking down. And I'm like, oh, God.
Our goal was to get the car out on track and see it move.
Yes.
We exceeded our expectations.
Yes. Yay! We will be in Bahrain. And you see Fernandez giving USF one. He's just like, suck it.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, that was they said – apparently, according to what Gascoigne was telling Autosport, was that they had a couple temperature issues in the first couple of go-abouts, but that was to be expected. But the general reliability was excellent, and they didn't break down, and they didn't have front noses come off at random times.
Pop.
So all in all, that's a victory. Albeit a moral victory, but it's a victory nonetheless.
I'm so much looking forward to Bahrain. One of the things that we've seen, you know, for several years in Formula One is everybody's excited and hopped up about the first race, and we get to Australia for the first race, and the first race runs, and the first corner turns into a giant pile of kindling, and all that expectation and excitement has to wait for the following race because suddenly the results are thrown out the window. Because you can't really tell how the cars really would have done because Ralf Schumacher fully mounted somebody.
It is actually orbiting the Earth as we speak.
at least going into Bahrain, we'll have Bahrain, a traditional Tilke track. Exactly. We'll have that to use as our guide to see how these cars will operate and for the season. Pretty exciting stuff that Lotus is going to be there. Now, if we could just get somebody else to show up.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We'll see. Tomorrow, Heike's supposed to drive the Lotus, or today if you're it'll be today, since you're getting the podcast on Thursday. But Heike's supposed to be in the car today. So, yay.
Yay.
Moving on to the final bit of the Formula One news that we have this week is Yas Marina Circuit.
Yeah, this is one that I did not expect at all. But
no.
the company that basically built and owns the Abu Dhabi circuit, the Yas Marina Circuit, it's Aldar Properties. Mm-hmm. They have decided to sell the whole thing to the state of Bahrain, to Abu Dhabi. Interesting. Basically, the company was they have to do it to pay their debts.
Yeah. But then again, it is quite possibly like probably the best looking circuit. Granted, you know, there's a neutered Tilke chicane in there, but
yeah,
it's probably one of the coolest tracks on the circuit. It's beautiful at night. The hotel's awesome. I love it. I am fully on board with this track.
Yeah, if they could straighten out a couple of those slow speed those kinks that they put in before the slow speed corners, it would be perfect.
Yes, the Tilke kinks.
Yes, the Tilke kinks. The characteristic Tilke design elements of track neutering.
Track neutering. Nice. It includes the roads, the utilities on Yas Island, Yas Marina Circuit, which is home to the Formula One racetrack, Yas Marina, and yes, the ever prestigious Yas Yacht Club. Right.
Yes, the Yas Cruise Ship Club, if you remember from the race.
Yes, that's awesome. That was sold. But the real estate development, according to the Auto Evolution article on it, Evolution on it, the real estate development management and investment company is also the owner of Ferrari World Theme Park in Abu Dhabi, among other projects.
Which probably will be operational this year.
Yes. And I think they're building a second one in Spain.
Very nice. That's probably a good place to put it these days.
Yeah. Call it a hunch. Let's hope that doesn't fall through. Oof.
A giant 80-foot statue of a Fernando Alonso out front in a Ferrari outfit, jeez, even though he hasn't done anything in the Ferrari yet.
That dude could finish in dead last place in the championship, and they'd hail him as a hero.
Yeah. So. And the Spanish would still dress up like Lewis Hamilton's relatives.
Oh, gosh. Jeez. Did you have to jump in? Racism is not tolerated.
What a world we live in.
Yes. And the final story for this evening comes from the world of Le Mans, because we have not talked about that in some time.
What was that?
Yeah, that other one, that club, that, the sports cars.
Yeah.
Five-time Le Mans 24-hour winner Emmanuel Pirou is going to be piloting Drayson Racing's Lola LMP1 for Sebring, Le Mans, and the Petit Le Mans this year. Wow.
Very nice.
Wow.
Very nice.
He's going to be joining the likes of course, Lord Paul Drayson himself and Johnny Cocker and the Judd-powered car. It's a Judd-powered car. And those are the big-time events. And that's just huge. He's been with Audi since, according to Autosport, and I'm pretty sure you can find this anywhere, but he's been with Audi since 94.
Mm-hmm.
94, that's over a decade.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite the jump there. Yeah, when you think about it, though, you know, Lola is bringing a P1 car to Sebring, and that's kind of a new thing for them. So we'll be excited for that.
Yeah, it's gonna be it'll be Drayson versus Aston.
Yeah, because nobody else is gonna show up.
Yeah, or they'll all be in the LMP2 categories waiting for the rest of the races.
Yeah,
but.
Oof.
You have to like Drayson's chances, actually, for the championship this year.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
I mean, granted, there's no competition, but even when they combine, the series and everybody, you know, gets together, you gotta like the chances. The Lola's not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is the same chassis used on the Aston, whether Dave Richards wants you to believe that or not. It is the same chassis used on the Aston. It's just
no, it's powered. Not. They painted it different.
Oh.
And they put it in the wind tunnel.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, then surely it's an Aston Martin thing. I saw it on the side of Dave Richards.
Yep. Absolutely.
Not.
Anyway.
But, yeah, that's all the news we got this week. Before we departed, though, I did want to give a special thanks to all the people who have been coming to the page the last week or so, you know, 2 weeks, and posting their comments. All the comments are most appreciated, and we respect the good points on there. May not always agree with them, but we respect them, and we're happy that you're posting. You know, you made last week, the fans actually of the site made last week a special week for us. We hit record highs on all kinds of things and got good, you know, just good discussion, motorsport discussion, which is what we're, you know, inevitably in the business for. And I just wanted to take time to thank each and every fan, as well. Please, if you're not already a member of the Facebook page, sign up, follow us on Twitter. As well as, you know, come to the website, subscribe to the RSS. We do have a forum. There's a big yellow tab that says forum. Register it. The conversation has been getting pretty good in there lately the last couple days.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely a good time. So I will bow out of the show by saying mucho gracias and thanks to everybody. And we will talk to you next week from the 100-acre. Well, no, we'll do the podcast Wednesday night. Then we will be talking to you. And we'll spell out our plans for 100 Acre Woods in next week's podcast to let you know what to expect. So,
very exciting. We're looking forward to kicking off the motorsports year with our first event of the season.
Oh, yeah.
And it's on. This is a great ride all the way through 2010 with all the motorsport is, you know, it's creeping up on us. We've got a month to go before we see cars on track in Bahrain, a month to go before we see cars on track in Sao Paulo. And then obviously WRC has kicked off. So it's on and I'm excited.
I'm excited too. I have actually not looked forward to a racing season probably ever more than this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very excited about Formula One. I'm excited to see these new tracks right at the beginning of the season for IndyCar with Barber and Sao Paulo. Mm-hmm. It's just this beginning of the season is so anticipated by me. I am so excited to just jump back into the world of motorsport. And no. Even though Danica was racing around a little tin top the last couple of weeks, it doesn't really do anything for me.
No. I could care less.
Yep.
But you got any saved rounds for the day there, Mike?
Not tonight, sir.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to the 26th episode of the Open Paddock Podcast, and we will be talking to you next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Thanks a lot. Have a good night.